You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Experts in the Morning is on now.
Welcome back for hour number three on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blute along with George Kurtz. Talking baseball all morning, just kind of running through the stories of the day in MLB. I touch on a little NFL this hour as well as people start to get prepared for free agency and the combine and all that good stuff with the league year turning over here in a couple of weeks. You know, George, one article that I was looking at, I'm just curious about, you know, their fantasy relevance. And these are five hitters that are really aiming to kind of repeat their breakout success from a year ago. We touched a little bit on Daniel Murphy yesterday as to everybody kind of being on board with the Mets making the decision to let him walk. But ultimately, Murphy was a monster last year, you know, through slashing 347, 395, 95. He hit 25 homers. And just curious, I mean, what your thoughts are. I don't have any expectations that he'll repeat what he did, but hitting in that lineup, obviously with Harper hitting behind him, just your thoughts about Daniel Murphy and the 2018 season. Do you like where he's going in drafts? Is he somebody that you'd look at?
Well, he has to be somebody you're going to look at. I mean, you mentioned he was a monster last season, and no one really saw. I mean, he could always hit. Yeah, he was always a professional hitter. He used both gaps, and he could hit the ball hard. Wasn't really a home run guy, but somebody who, you know, who could hit. Not somebody who, oh my God, how'd this happen? Do I think he can hit have the same season, an MVP type season again? No, I'm not going to go that far. And second base is pretty deep, but really, who are you absolutely taking over him? Altuve, sure, I'll take Altuve over him. After that, I'm probably taking Cano over him. You know, there. But that's it. I think I'll over Trey Turner. I think that's 50-50, depending on who you like. Dozier, same thing. You know, Kinsler, Odor, DeGord, if you want the stolen base, LeMahieu with Colorado, Kipnis, Segura. I mean, you go on and on with second baseman. Matt Carpenter might have second base eligibility.
Pedroia. Yeah, here's the NFBC average right now for second baseman is, you kind of went through ran the gamut, but in order, right now it's going Altuve, Turner, Cano, Dozier, Murphy, Odor, Gordon, Segura, Kinsler, LeMahieu. So Murphy comes in at number five, but as you said, you'd probably really only take Altuve and Cano over him for sure, mainly because you think Trey Turner is being vastly overvalued in some instances.
I think this is the type of drafter I am. I'm a conservative guy here. I'm not going to take somebody who's had four good months. You know, did he make the adjustments? Because I guarantee you everyone's looking at him. You know, during the offseason, they were watching the film, watching the video, trying to find the holes in his swing, and they found him. Now he has to make those adjustments. Some players make them right away. You know, he's that good a hitter, no big deal. See ball, hit ball. Some players don't, and it could take a couple of months. I don't know which one Turner is. My guess is he's going to end up having a very good year. But am I taking him at the bottom of the first round, top second round? No, I can't do that. That's just too much of a risk for me. You know, what if he is not that player? Because we don't have a track record. You know, I say this all the time, Mike. When it comes to my first probably three rounds, I like to be able to look in this day and age, I guess, look online, look at a player's stats, and know what I'm getting. With Turner, I can't do that. I'm guessing. I'm assuming. Yeah, I think he's going to be good. I'm pretty sure he's going to be good, but I'm not positive. So I'd rather go with a Robinson Cano, who I do have a pretty good idea what he's going to do. You know, so that's where I am with that. I have no problem with Trey Turner. I like Trey Turner. But in the end, I'm going to go with a more proven player. That might cost me in the end. Trey Turner might have an MVP season. He absolutely might. But he might not. Where Cano, I know, is going to have at least a very good, solid season.
Yeah, so, you know, interesting that we're talking about, you know, Turner and Murphy in this same conversation. But at the same time, you know, Murphy going right now, according to NFBC, the fifth player off the board, his average pick is right around 37, 38 by aggregated rankings. So we're really talking end of third, beginning of the fourth round. That seems reasonable to me, even if you roll back some of those stats. But who knows? If Turner is hitting well and he got Harper behind him who's bouncing back, then Murphy's part of that offense, which could be from one through five or six, could be a juggernaut.
It could be. I mean, Harper's got to bounce back. right? Mm-hmm. We all know that Harper had the he had some injuries last year that really slowed him down. He's got to bounce back. And we're seeing in drafts, Harper's going around 9-10, where every other year he was top three. He used to argue, Harper or Trout. Now there's very little doubt. It's Trout. So Harper has to bounce back. Can Zimmerman hit at all at first base? You know, they don't have Wilson Ramos now at catcher. It's Derek Norris, so they're going to take a hit there. But everybody else should be, you know, decent. You know, Anthony Rendon, I expect another good season out of him. We talked about Trey Turner. Adam Eaton, I didn't like the trade. I thought they gave up way too much for Eaton, but I think he'll hit. You know, my only issue with Eaton, though, he goes from Cellular Field or whatever they're calling the White Sox home field now, which is a hitter's haven. Great ballpark. Maybe the best ballpark in the American League to hit in, to Washington, which is not a good ballpark to hit in. So his numbers will decrease there. Jason Worth, I think, can give you some value late. Once again, a bench player, a bench outfielder, not someone I want starting, but someone I'm not completely shying away from. I think he has still a little left in the tank. So I think they'll hit. I don't think they're going to be a monster hitting team. You know, it's going to come down to guys like Turner, Murphy, and Harper really going to have to carry this team. They have a lot of, they do have some dead spots in the lineup. Pretty much if Zimmerman's at the bottom half, that's 7, 8, 9. Could be a complete zero there. So I don't think they're a monster lineup, but it's a good hitting lineup.
Yeah, 1-6 could look good. By the way, the White Sox field name is Guaranteed Rate Field. Signed a 13-year naming rights agreement for the ballpark last August.
And you wonder why I don't know the name.
Yeah, it's not something you should ever know. It's something I found out literally 7 seconds ago on Google. So doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. It was Comiskey, then it was DeSalle, now it's Guaranteed Rate Field. So.
I like the old names, man. I miss the old names of all these ballparks. Yeah. Now I got to know the corporate names. I mean,
that page has turned long ago, unfortunately, George.
I know. Just get off my lawn.
Yeah, and I would say that...
I don't have a lawn. There's snow all over my lawn.
Well, the funny thing about it, though, is with the naming rights, they have all turned over so many times, especially...
That's the problem. I can't remember those either.
During the dot-com boom, those companies came in and out as naming rights, spending tons of money wildly, and, you know, gosh... There's a bunch of stadiums out there that have changed over 3 or 4 times. I think I'm still calling the Giants Stadium Pac Bell, and I know it hasn't been that for a long time. I think it's AT&T Park. 3Com, right.
AT&T is Cowboys Stadium.
AT&T Stadium is Cowboys. Yeah, it's just – it's.
I know some of them.
Yeah. I'm okay with it, but there's no way to keep up with it. And is it does it really matter when we're talking fantasy sports? But So there you go. Daniel Murphy is one player. A couple of other hitters that are potentially poised. I mean, another guy we're staying at the second base position is Brian Dozier. So Brian Dozier, we just talked about, ranked fourth in aggregate rankings amongst second basemen. He's really right in front of Daniel Murphy here. So you can see how you can get on a run for second baseman. I think you and I have talked about it before. There's pretty clear tiers as far as you're concerned. At second base, and you know, if you miss out on one, you know, you could be hunting for some stats if you wait a little bit. But anyway, Brian Dozier and Daniel Murphy just 4 or 5 picks apart in the aggregate ranking. So your thoughts about Brian Dozier, who slashed 268, 345, 46 last year, ton of home runs. So your thoughts on Brian Dozier being able to at least match up to what he did last year?
I mean, I think when I think of Dozier, the first thing, boy, is he going to be traded in season? Is he going to be traded by the deadline? That's all we heard all offseason, right? Him and the Dodgers. You know, the Dodgers ended up settling for Forsythe. But the Twins did want to move. They didn't want to do the one-for-one deal. They didn't want De Leon only for Dozier. And I don't blame them for that. I think he is worth more than De Leon, so I don't worry about that. I don't get on the Twins for that. That being said, they're a rebuilding team. I mean, they just are. They have all holes all over the place, mainly in the pitching staff. They can hit somewhat with the guys they have around. Dozier is what he is. All right? I don't know if he's going to hit 40 home runs again. I think that's a little crazy to expect that. But 30-plus home runs is probably a lock. He's hit 70 home runs, 93 actually, the past 3 years. So he's averaging 31. I'll take that. RBIs is 100, 99, but it was 100 last year after 77 and 71. All right, so... I like his offensive production all around. If he ever got to a good hitter's ballpark, I think he'd be a monster. Although, believe it or not, Target Field is not the pitcher's haven that we thought it would be. So, listen, I like Dozier. I like him all around. He can steal just some bases, and by some, I mean he could be a 20-20 guy, easy. 20-plus home runs, 20 stolen bases. I don't know if he'll quite get there in stolen bases. It's hard not to like him. He plays almost every game. You know, the last three years, he's averaging 156 games played. So that might be the first thing I look at with players, Mike. Are they going to play every day? Can I put them in my lineup? I feel pretty good about it. You know, because availability is the most important ability to me. I need you to be in the lineup, need you to play. So if I'm getting that, then I'm happy. You know, so I do like what I'm seeing there as far as that's concerned. I like Dozier. I think he could also be that safe guy for me. I just said, looked at his numbers. Past 3 years, I know what I'm going to get. You know, with Trey Turner, I mentioned I don't know what I'm going to get so much. You know, Daniel Murphy had the one big season here. Can he do it again? I have Dozier as my number three. Number four. I do have Turner ahead of him.
Okay. So I actually saw a game at Target Field last night. Pretty cool ballpark. They got a lot of interesting things there. You know, one of the newer ballparks, obviously. They put some cool stuff in there.
What were they doing at Target Field last night?
I don't know. What was going on there?
You said you saw a game at Target Field
last night. No, no. I said last year. Did I say last night? I'm sorry.
I mean, it was a football game or a soccer game or something like that.
No, I went to a game at Target Field last season. It was right around Memorial Day or so. But cool stadium. Minneapolis is a pretty cool city. So you can walk, you know, in between the tunnels, in between the buildings that they have, and right into Target Field. So, you know, because of the cold weather, the buildings are all connected downtown, so you can kind of walk miles in these internal tunnels without even having to go outside. And it was raining, so it was a huge bonus for us. In any event, as part of that, I wanted to transition to one thing I'd be concerned about, and at least this article says is what you want to pump the brakes on, and I want to give the person on MLB.com credit where credit is due. This is written by Andrew Simon from MLB.com. So the 29-year-old second baseman hit just .205, slashing .205, .282, .354 with 17 homers over 565 places from the beginning of July 2015 to the end of last May. Now, clearly, he figured it out and went on an absolute tear. But does that give you pause that he was in such a funk and came out of it really for, it was a four-month period, and he's done it in the past, but just kind of curious if that gives you any pause, because he only homered a total of 16 times in more than 1,600 minor league appearances. It seems to be an adjustment to his swing that has created these homers, but I assume it's a long-term adjustment anyway.
He said homers. It's not just last year he hit homers, so no, it doesn't worry me. A lot of home run hitters are streaky. You know, once they get into a groove, once that swing is perfect, they're hitting everything out. And Dozier, I think, was the perfect example of that last year. I mean, there it seemed like every night he was hitting two home runs. DFS, he was a must put in at one point. You had to have, I don't care how much money you were paying for him, you had to plug him in there because it did seem like he was hitting two home runs a night. You know, obviously that wasn't the case, but he was that hot. You know, I think one thing that might concern me, you know, 42 home runs, 99 RBIs. Boy, you would think that should be higher. Don't you think?
Yeah,
that?
Sure would, but the team was terrible last year. So
maybe they get better with Byron Buxton this year if he can finally figure it out. But that'd be my one concern. I said with Dozier, I just feel comfortable taking him. You know, do I expect 42 home runs? No, but I do expect 30 plus, which is what he's pretty much average there. I think that he'll steal some bases, at least 10 plus, maybe even up there in the upper teens, 20. And the average, I might be concerned that the average could hurt you. Oh, it could hurt me. He bet at .268 last year. I would take that run. I'm afraid he might, you know, hit 35 home runs, but with a .240 average.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay Rays by FanGraphs are projected to win 13 games more than they did last year and have them finish right at .500. The only team projected to have a bigger bump in wins in the American League are the Minnesota Twins. They expect them to improve by 16 wins. So hopefully they do get it figured out. We'll take a look at some more players looking to repeat their 2016 success after the break. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Welcome back. George and I talking about hitters that had breakout seasons in 2016, looking to repeat that success in 2017. And guy that we heard a lot. I felt like, you know, George, every year you have that guy that you feel like everybody is talking about. Doesn't mean that he's Mike Trout. Doesn't mean that he's Clayton Kershaw. But you just feel like every expert is talking about him, either for a breakout season or they don't like his potential for a breakout season, but just a very often discussed player. And I felt like, to me, just my perspective, that Christian Yelich was that guy last year. I felt like everybody was talking about him. There was some disagreement, but for the most part, people liked him. He is currently ranked as the 14th outfielder in NFBC average drafts, 57th overall pick. Last year, he slashed at 298, 376, and 483, 21 homers, 98 RBIs. You'd have to consider that a successful campaign, 659 plate appearances. So was obviously playing just about every day with 155 starts. So your thoughts on Christian Yelich and whether or not you like him to continue to build off of that success. He's only 24 years old, 25 this season.
Yeah, I think that's obviously a successful season. Yeah. He is 25 years old, turned 25 in December. So my only problem is this. We know Miami Ballpark is the Grand Canyon. It has that stupid thing in left center field that I still don't know what it is. Really, I hope if they ever get new owners, I hope they take that thing down.
Yeah.
I'll never understand why you would do that. Just business-wise, why are you taking away thousands upon thousands of seats to put a sculpture, a thing? I seriously don't know what it is. I'll never understand that.
Based on their attendance lately, I don't think it matters too much at the moment.
There's the joke. Dum-dum. Good for you.
Sorry.
Good for you, Mike.
Sorry. I had to get
good
it in,
for you.
Buddy. I had to get it in. You teed it up for me.
Send all your hate mail, Miami Marlins fans, to Mike Blewett, care of at rotoexperts.com.
A good friend of mine is a Yankees fan, went to a game last year, and he was so excited. He was in South Beach for the weekend with some friends, and he goes to the ballpark. He's, like, excited, and he's like, he texted us. He's like, no joke, there's like 5,000 people here. It was a Friday night. He's like, there's like 5,000 people here. You could sit anywhere you want. So in any event, he just thought it was kind of depressing based on how nice a place it is and how nice a stadium it is in general. Anyway, back to Yelich.
Yeah, generally it's not a good thing when you go to a game and it's guaranteed everyone gets their own foul ball night.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? I think it's why they want Jeffrey Loria out of there so bad. They're probably counting the days till he sells that team. But
ownership story, by the way, keeps changing. It seems like now the Trump relations are out on a deal. Is in the ambassadorship because they don't want to make it seem like it's a backroom handshake kind of deal. So we'll keep you posted on that. But I think for most Marlins fans, they're going to be happy to see Jeffrey Loria go.
Are you kidding? Trump is worried about how things might look? Wow.
I mean, they also promoted his daughter's line of clothing at Nordstrom's, or he said, whatever. I don't want to get political, but you're right. It is odd that it seems like they might be backing away because of that. But who knows? Maybe it's the people. Maybe they just don't want to pay what they're alleged to be paying for the Marlins.
Right, now they're worried about perception. Yeah. Might be a little late there. Yeah, hey, back to Yelich here. I'm not a very political person either. I'm not going to get involved in this. I would like him so much more if he wasn't hitting in this ballpark, because then I think you could see his numbers go up across the board, you know, especially the home runs. 21 last year, which really is a combination of the prior 3 years combined. His career behind, he only hit 20 the previous 3 years. 21 last year. Can that number come up a little bit? Maybe get 24 out of them. I don't know if I'm quite projected for that high, but maybe. Listen, I like the player. Bottom line is I do like the player. He's going to have an average that helps you. He's going to drive in some runs. He's there, a big guy there, and he's hitting in front of Stanton. And we all know no one wants to pitch to Stanton because he's a sports center waiting to happen. You know, see how far he can hit a ball. You know, if he can kill that monstrosity in left center field. So I think he's in a good spot there. Whether you believe in lineup protection or not, he has it. I don't care anybody. He has the lineup protection. I like Yelich. My only concern is power. I say he's not. I don't see a 30 home run season ever happening for him. Not there anyway. So that's my only worry there. I would like to see him steal a little bit more. The home runs came up. Stolen bases went down last year. Why? You know, is Don Mattingly one of those managers that doesn't like guys to run? We've seen that before. Don't want to give up outs. You know, so I wonder about that. Or maybe it's because, you know, he just didn't He was hitting doubles, too many doubles. He had 38 doubles last year, hit 21 home runs. Maybe when he was on base, there's no chance to run. I wouldn't mind seeing him steal a handful more bases. Would make me really happy about him. That being said, you mentioned he's going 14th overall, puts him somewhere around round four. I have no issues with that whatsoever.
Yeah, so to give you just both sides of the argument, I suppose, he's an extreme ground ball hitter. He got the ball in the air a bit more in 2016 and posted a BABIP above 350 for the fourth straight campaign. So obviously does a lot with it. But still posted the MLB's fourth highest ground ball rate and second lowest fly ball rate. Last year, while his homers per fly ball rate was eighth highest. In other words, that power surge from 9 to 21 might be a little difficult to maintain. I think you sort of alluded to that in your comments and frankly flat out said it. And defensively, they're talking about the transition to him being a full-time center fielder and that whether or not that could take a toll.
It could. It's more strain on your body. You know, obviously you got more ground to cover, a lot more running. But then again, he is 25. So I'm not all that worried about it, but yes, if you're looking for a reason, a tiebreaker with somebody else, sure, that could be it, but that's probably overthinking things.
Yeah, I mean, he's kept in my main league, so it's not really something I'm concerned about, but at the same time, as I get into other leagues, Yelich is a guy that we're going to be talking about. I wanted to transition next to a guy that, listen, he became a little bit famous on this show for a different kind of debate. John Segura from the Mariners, 694 plate appearances last year. He slashed 319, 368, 499, 20 homers, 64 RBIs. Following a solid first full season with the Brewers in 2013, he endured two tough years, injuries, personal tragedy, and then he moved to Arizona with a clean slate, and he took an advantage at an age, he's 26, when many players were hitting their strides. So his average velocity, exit velocity was up, his average launch angle was up, but you've talked about it in the past. You like Segura as a player. You don't really have a problem with him. The only reason you got into the debate a couple of weeks ago is because you thought that he was drafted a little too high by our friend Michael Cardano. You don't have a problem really with Segura as the player. I do think you have some concerns about his ability to continue to run in Seattle now that he's landed in Seattle. So give me some additional thoughts perhaps on Segura.
Actually, I didn't have much of a problem with where he was drafted. I thought he was drafted a little low. My problem with what Mike Cardano did is he admitted that he took him because there was a run on shortstops. So he took a shortstop because all the other shorts in round four. You already have position scarcity in round four. You know, that was my biggest argument with him. Other things that I'm concerned about, yes, you mentioned the stolen bases. Certain teams don't seem to want to run. Seattle didn't run at all last year. That being said, Mike put up a very good point. You know, they got Dyson too. They do seem like they want to run this year, and I would have to agree with that. You know what? Forget about Segura. If you acquire Dyson, that's what he does. So you have to be giving him the green light to run, which means you should be giving Segura the green light to run. You know, that would make sense. Segura's stolen base rate is about at 75%. Not great, not bad. Some teams believe it has to be at 80 to make it worth it, or else you're giving up too many outs there. So that's another thing to worry about there. The home runs will certainly come down. You know, he had 20 last year in Chase Field where the ball flies at him. That could easily be half that in Seattle. That wouldn't shock me at all. Average should be fine. And I also worry about him changing leagues. I worry about any player changing leagues, especially when it hasn't played in the other league in a while. Also might want to worry, why does he keep switching teams? Milwaukee, Arizona, Seattle? For a guy who seems to be a pretty good hitter, he had two down years in Milwaukee. All of a sudden, teams can't wait to get rid of him. You know, can't wait for him to move on. So I just find that surprising. Did Arizona believe he was a sell high, you know, in the fantasy terms, that we have to get rid of him before he craters? So you might want to look at that as well. So that being said, you know, I think I told you that I tried to acquire him in my deep fantasy league. I thought the price was right. He was $8 in a salary cap league. I was trying to get him, I forget exactly for what. I think it was for a minor league shortstop and probably something else. Oh, JT Realmuto, the Marlins that we were just talking about, and Richard Urena. That's who the other guy wanted, but I wouldn't give up Urena, who I think is going to be a very, very good player. So I said I have nothing wrong with the player. I do like him. My problem with Cardano, though, was taking him because of a shortstop run in round four. I think it's silly. You don't do things like that. That being said, for where his ADP is going, it's right about right. Maybe a tick early, but nothing that I would really argue about other than the context I put it in.
Yeah, so the last four seasons, to give you an idea, as you said, he changed places a couple of times. He had personal tragedy, an injury throughout those years. But he was an all-star back in 2013 when he hit 294, dropped to 246, up to 257, and then a huge jump back up to 319. So that while that's been all over the map, I guess, you know, the one positive I would look at is, as you said, they did acquire Dyson, who will hit at the top of the order, just according to a projected lineup that I have right here. So it'd be Dyson, Segura, Cano, Cruz, Seager. That's the ability to score a lot of runs, if nothing else, George.
Here's another question for you. How will Segura handle being the number two? Because if he's the second, the number two batter, Dyson's on base. Guess what his job is?
Yeah, that's a huge concern of mine when players move into a different role in the lineup and whether or not they can deal with somebody running in front of them constantly. Some players don't mind it at all. We've talked about this before. Pujols hates it. Other guys, other power hitters don't mind it at all. But that's always a huge concern for me when you're slotting him into a different role in the lineup that he's unfamiliar with.
But it also means that his job will be to take pitches. Give Dyson a chance to run. There's good news there, too. It means that first base hole between first and second will be wide open if he wants to shoot the ball through there. So there's always good and bad with it. But you mentioned some players hate it. Hate all the throws over to first base. Hate that, you know, if Dyson's dancing around first base trying to distract the pitcher. Some players like it. Some players don't. For me personally, I think it's only a good thing. You let the pitcher pay attention to Dyson. Throw me more fastballs. You would think it's a good thing all around here. But you never know how a player's going to handle that. Like I said, that being said, overall, I like Segura. You know, I'm not really poo-pooing the player here. I just don't like the way he was drafted. I mean, the only second shortstops I would take over him, Correa. I mean, if Machado is a shortstop, of course, him too. Correa, Seager, Lindor, Bogarts, Villar. Probably Story, but Story and Segura comes down to what do I want more. If I want power, then Story. If I want stolen bases, then Segura.
Got it. So, yes, I mean, it's an interesting debate, no doubt.
It was fun.
I guess a question, too, while we're talking about the Mariners, I mean, Robbie Cano is Robbie Cano. He's an extremely talented hitter. But with these two guys being placed in front of him, as you mentioned, it could be a philosophy shift. It doesn't have to be wholesale, but two guys that can run at the top of the lineup with Cano in front of them. Do you just think it's Robbie Cano business as usual, or does this create a lot more opportunities to drive in runs? Do you think it could mean even a nice bump for Robbie Cano in some ways on the RBI front?
I mean, hey, we have to assume Dyson can get on base.
I agree with you.
We don't know that yet. He's never really done this over a full season. Will he be platooned? How will that change? Will Segura bat first some days when there's a left-hander on the mat? I mean, we don't know how this is going to work there. To ask much more from Cano, I mean, what do you want from the guy? He's batted 298, 287, 314, 314, 313, 300. The batting average is there. The home runs, I don't – like Dozier, I don't know if he expects 39 home runs again. I think that's asking a whole lot. But 30-plus, I don't think is asking a whole lot. I think he's for – yeah, everybody was down on him coming into last season because of what happened in 2015 where he had the hernia problem. We knew he still batted 287. And he took off the last 2 months of the season once he got over the hernia. You know, now last year he had a great season. 39, 103, batted 298, scored 107 runs. I mean, those are MVP type numbers. And I don't see any reason why he won't do that again, other than the home runs coming down just because of natural digression a little bit. I don't think he could do that again. You know, so I think he'll regress a little bit to home runs. But other than that, I think Cano will be fine. You want to argue and say, hey, because of those two, that he'll put up better numbers? Listen, I wouldn't debate with you, but I just don't see what are you asking for? 40 home runs? Because he's going to see more fastballs. 110 ribbies? Okay, I can see he's still not going to run. He's not going to steal any bases. So Cano, this is why I have Cano as my second baseman after Altuve, because I think it's just going to be there.
Yeah, I think your point about Jared Dyson being put in that role, like. Is he the type of guy that at his age, he's not a young player, is he the type of guy that can, he's 32 years of age, is he the type of guy that can seize that leadoff role and get it done day in, day out? That remains to be seen. Yeah, he can run. We all know that. And But who knows? You know, if he struggled badly, would Segura get moved up to the top slot? You know, that remains to be seen. Can Segura hit with somebody in front of him where he's going to be expected to take pitches? Would he struggle there for a couple of months before he levels out and builds into that role? We'll see. I think there's some question marks there, but certainly a lot of potential for runs being scored at the top of that lineup. So I'll continue to talk about some of these MLB players. Maybe we'll get to some football in that last segment. Mike and George back after this. We're back, better than ever. We're talking about a lot of opportunities here for players to break out in MLB, but wanted to talk a little bit about football. A couple of things in news, George. Brian Daboll leaves to go to be the offensive coordinator at Alabama. He leaves the Patriots with a slot open, and there's a known friendship between Belichick and Chip Kelly. You think Chip Kelly is, Alabama and the Pats, obviously there's a very strong connection there between Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. And they both, in a similar way, just have a manner of stockpiling coaching talent. Even if it's not in a traditional role, they just have guys in all kinds of different roles, whether they're analysts or assistants or whatever they can do. Obviously, the Patriots' offensive coordinator position is entrenched with Josh McDaniels here, but you see Chip Kelly maybe making a move as opposed to being out of coaching for the year, maybe making a move to become an assistant with the Pats.
I guess it's possible, but at the end, I don't know if I see that as the match made in heaven there. First thing I thought it was, oh my God, this would be Bill Belichick. I want to say, hey, I can even make this guy work. So it wouldn't shock me either, but I don't know if I see that as the best match.
Yeah, I'm actually not as down on Chip Kelly as some people. I do think that he is a really good offensive mind, and I know some people think he's more natural in college, but from everything that I've heard, I think he really hates recruiting, and I don't think I don't think he wants to do it again, so I don't think he's going to try to go back to college. I think if he's options, then he'll figure it out, and he'll have to hire some really top-notch recruiters to just come in and run the show for him. Almost in the way that very veteran college head coaches would react, you know, where they don't get on the road too much. They just wait for the players to come to them and their staff is the one doing it. So that would be the only way. So I just wonder if Chip Kelly could be a fit there in New England. I could see it. I know they are, it's the Patriots tight ends coach, Brian Daboll, became the Alabama offensive coordinator. You just wonder if Chip Kelly can slot in there somehow, even as an analyst or a quality assurance, you know, whatever they want to call it. It'll be an interesting little match made in possibly heaven. But, George, from your sound of it, you don't know if that's the best move
in
the world.
I might go in the other direction, but yeah, sure, yeah. Heaven
or hell, sure. But one thing I did pick up on NFL.com, and again, I like to give credit where credit is due because we're talking about, I believe this is Elliot Harrison, media analyst for NFL.com. He's trying to figure out maybe the best fits for some NFL free agents. And granted, a few of these guys are going to be in the franchise tag world. We talk about Kirk Cousins. I don't really think you can talk about him too much after the Redskins unless there's a really huge line drawn in the sand. Obviously, Cousins is going to be going for that long-term deal. I do think it is something that they could get done. But as you have said, you've been open about saying, why don't they just do the tag again? Just let them take another look at it. I just wonder how hostile the environment would be between the two if they did that again, correct?
I mean, he'd get 24 guaranteed if they did the tag. So it's hard to complain about that. But, of course, he wants a long-term deal. And I've said it before, if he got the long-term deal, it would probably be for more guaranteed money than Andrew Luck got. Doesn't mean he's a better quarterback than Luck. This means he's a free agent at the right time. So I can see it from both things. I think Kirk Cousins knows. Forget that, we talked yesterday. Forget that he played well the last couple of games. That might hurt a chance for a long term with Washington this season. But if he banks on himself, has another good season, it should be great, another good season, he's going to get paid by somebody the year after that because there's no way they're going to tag him next year. That'd be, what, $39 million? That's not going to happen. So forget that. So he'll get his long-term deal. He may have to wait another year. I think the worst case scenario is I don't even think an injury is the worst case scenario. I think he'd be fine with that because if he tore his ACL and training camp didn't play, he'd be fine getting a big still a good contract after that. His worst case scenario is he plays, doesn't play great, maybe chokes again in big games, and then people start thinking, he can't get the team into the playoffs. Sure, he can play well between weeks 1 and 14, but then when it crunch time doesn't play well. So I can see that being the worst-case scenario there. But if I'm Cousins, if I don't like what the Redskins are offering, I'm not signing. I'm just not doing it. I'll take the $24 million. You made, 19 last year, so you already got 40, whatever it was. You got $40-plus million in the bank anyway. I'll bank on myself right now and go for it. Have another good season, and then move on from there. You said you're unhappy with Washington this year. Well, you don't have to be with Washington next year. You'll have, what do we think, 7-8 teams bidding on him, minimum? Maybe more. There are teams that need a quarterback every year. That's not going to be solved in this offseason. There'll still be quarterbacks next year that need a deal. And we've seen this before. Oh, I'm unhappy. They treat me like crap, all this other stuff. And then they offer you the most money. Oh, I love this organization. It's all about the money.
Yeah.
So I don't care about him saying he's unhappy or anything like that. I understand he wants a long-term deal, but I get it from Washington's point of view too. Before you say, hey, we're going to give you $75 million guaranteed, we want to make sure. I get it.
Man, it just looked like he had done it. It looked like he had bet on himself and looked like he had done the job that he needed to do. And you're right to say last couple of games, particularly the Giants game, shed him in a different light. And I asked a question on Twitter like minutes after that interception. Cousins played well enough to guarantee that he's going to be a wealthy man. I just wonder how much he ultimately cost himself, whether it's in the short term or the long term. I just wonder with his play in that spot, it obviously has the Redskins thinking twice about it, right? So in some ways he has cost himself, at least in the short term.
He's making more money in the short term. In the short term, he's making more money. Because he's just not getting the guarantee.
Suppose.
He's getting 24 guaranteed. He's probably not going to get that in over the life of a contract. He's going to get 24 guaranteed over 5 years. He's going to get guaranteed money up front. I would think it'd be around $65-70 million offhand.
I would guess that guarantee, if he market right now, the guarantee would probably be 60 or so, right? You'd have to start with that number.
I would assume around there, yes.
Yeah, so it's going to be in that wheelhouse. So I guess that's really kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, so he'll get that next year plus the $24 million he got this year.
It could, but there are question marks. Because what if he doesn't play well? What if he does tear an ACL? I mean, if it's just an ACL.
Oh, what if Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson leave and they don't replace him?
They're not going to.
Well, they have to replace one.
I mean,
they got Josh Doctson.
They got Josh. It's interesting that you mentioned Alshon Jeffrey because he's the next player I was going to talk about.
I'm just trying to help you, Mike.
Yeah, as they are trying to look at potential fits. They do not have the Washington listed as one of them. Potential fits that he has here, Elliot Harrison has here, are the Rams, the 49ers, and the Buccaneers. He's another player who could get the tag slapped on him again, but it appears to be a far less likely outcome for the Bears receiver than the guys above. He's been an on and off player. The Bears just paid him $14.6 million under the franchise designation for 52 catches and 2 touchdowns. He obviously is he's the worst kind of fantasy player when it comes to being injured because he's chronically questionable to doubtful to out. There's a lot of last minute, I didn't expect him to be inactive. That's happened a bunch of times over the last 2 years. So it's expected that they're actually going to let him walk. I do think it's the Bears. You and I have talked about it in the past. But teams that anticipate looking at him are the Rams, the 49ers, and the Bucks. Do you like any of those situations for him? In L.A., Kenny Britt is a free agent, so maybe he replaces Kenny Britt.
All right. Jeffrey's probably going to go for the most money. I don't think he's going back to Chicago. I'd be shocked if he goes back to Chicago. I don't think that's happening. You mentioned the Rams. They certainly need playmakers. If they offer the most money, sure. I think he's going wherever the most money is. That being said, I'm not so do I really want to go to the Rams? Goff, he didn't look good last year. So I don't know. What was the second choice? I know the Bucks were the third choice.
The Niners have the second most cap space in the league next to the Browns. You'd have Torrey Smith on one side, but frankly, a question mark at QB. So would the Niners be likely?
Question mark. You don't know who the QB is.
Yeah. But if they offer the most money, to your point, he's probably going to take that check.
Yes, and I don't blame him for doing that. I don't blame anybody for doing that. That being said, of the three teams you mentioned, if I have a choice, I'm going with the Bucks, right? Mike Evans, you already got the number one guy there. You got Cameron Brate. We don't know who the running back's going to be with the Doug Martin situation there. You got Jameis Winston, a young upcoming quarterback. All the pieces are in place, and you wouldn't be the number one guy, which I think is a good thing. So the pressure wouldn't be on you. And that offense could really be dynamic. So I think the Bucks, sure, as far as Jeffrey's concerned, but I don't think they'll offer the most money. You know, I think the Rams are going to have to make a splash, right? You move to L.A., now you got to make that splash. You got Goff. You got to do something. You got to figure out a way to get that offense moving. So, especially Todd Gurley, what went wrong with him last year? So I think the Rams, it makes some sense.
The problem I have with the Rams situation, though, is that they just paid and overpaid Tavon Austin in the past offseason. So you're committing a lot of money at the receiver position when there are other holes on offense. First of all, I'm not going to bash Jared Goff like some other people are going to bash him. I thought there was a terrible situation for him to be in. Do I think he's going to be a superstar in this league? I do not. But I'm not going to bash him because, frankly, he didn't have a fair opportunity with that coaching staff and that team around him. The offensive line is a disaster. Todd Gurley can't even run behind it. They have an aging defense in some spots. They don't know if Tremaine Johnson is going to be back. They have a lot of question marks, not the least of which is a 31-year-old head coach that's never done it before. So I would have a hard time committing, but if they're going to make another splash with another free agent, I guess they're going to go for it, but it's crazy to me. The Bucks, I mean, Mike Evans is still on a rookie deal, so that's what actually helps. He helps them. Vincent is 34 years old, technically a free agent, but he's talked about retiring. I don't know if he's officially put in his papers. I consider him to be retired until he says he isn't. So I do think that's the best. I just think of the most money, and that could be the Niners here.
Listen, I can't argue with you, Mike. I'd like to argue it. I truly would, but I think you're right. I think the Niners, listen, if I'm the Niners, I'm probably, you have Kaepernick. I know he's caused some waves there, but you don't have anybody better. Maybe you just, this rookie you want to draft. Maybe you don't want Kaepernick being around the rookie. You know, and I get that. And so, you think it's a bad influence and all that. Fine, got to do what you got to do. But I think Kaepernick could also be a little better if he actually had someone to throw to.
Yeah, that receiving core. Well, you got after Smith.
And even he's terrible. Was,
yeah, I know. It's been, Patton and Ellington and who was good last year? Jeremy Curley is really your best option there. Vance McDonald at tight end. Honestly, Carlos Hyde is like the best receiver on the team. And safe to say there's a lot of question marks with that organization. That's obviously why the head coach and the GM got big deals, long-term deals, a third year in a row with a new head coach. Hadn't been done by any NFL team in 40 years. The last team to do that was the San Francisco 49ers. So we'll talk a little bit more football before we hit the top of the hour. I'll set up the new I'll set up the shows for the rest of the day for you. It's Mike and George back after this. Welcome back, talking free agents, NFL free agents, and obviously that's the time of year. George, the Combine comes up. It starts next Tuesday, the Combine starts. Is that something you check in at all? I know we always talk about you have the three TVs, something you throw on in the background just to get a sense of what people are talking about?
No, not really. I think it's way overhyped. I mean,
most
of these things don't really relate to football. I mean, how fast can you run without pads? That's fantastic. How high can you jump? I kind of like that test a little bit, but most of it's just complete BS. Just like these, when they have these the pro days for the players, and everybody visits their college, but it's all set up for them to be perfect. I mean, come on. I mean, I just don't. It's fun, but no, I won't. I won't even put it on mic if I'm not watching anything.
I've heard Bill Polian say that the pro day meant nothing to him.
How could it?
It meant absolutely zero to him because it was, as you said, set up for them to excel. The only time it ever really was a sort of a head turner to me was when Teddy Bridgewater's was so bad, when he set it up to, and you know, people called it like a D plus effort of a pro day. He still ended up being a first round draft pick. So how much did it kill his stock? Teddy Bridgewater's got other issues right now, but kind of curious. I will throw it on. Just get some thoughts on some of the draft analysts and what they're talking about in relation to players more than anything else. I'm not so concerned as to whether or not a player X can run a 4.340. I'm more concerned of what the draft analysts are saying and what teams are saying about the certain players, not about how the combine is impacting them materially. So in any event, the reason I started talking about free agency, I saw that Cameron Wake signed a 2-year contract extension. They announced it yesterday. It's a $19 million extension worth $11 million guaranteed. The last contract he will see, I would imagine. He's 35 years of age. He overcame adversity last year, bouncing back from the season-ending Achilles injury in 2015. So I think the Dolphins just kind of taking care of business. They move on from Mario Williams. They make sure Cameron Wake is back, and they need to try to continue to improve this team. You know, I probably surprised some people. They scraped out 10 wins this year and made a playoff game, and that was with a third stringer, unfortunately for them, or second stringer in their instance, quarterback. But Cameron Wake back in the fold there in Miami.
Yeah, pass rusher, right? Pass rusher. You can rush the passer. You're going to get chance after chance after chance. And Wake had a fantastic season last year. I mean, yeah. Certainly could have, I shouldn't say could have won, but it was in the running for comeback player of the year after the Achilles tear the year before. The Dolphins' defense was atrocious, but Wake wasn't the problem there at all. I understand what the Dolphins did. You know, yeah, if you can, like I said, if you can rush the passer, it's like a left-handed reliever. You got a job, man. You got a job.
Forever. 11.5 sacks last year, fifth career Pro Bowl, and sort of one of the team leaders. You know, they moved on from defensive lineman Mario Williams and Earl Mitchell. And Mike Tannenbaum said his biggest priority this offseason was taking care of his own players. So they're expected to discuss contract extensions with leading wide receiver Jarvis Landry and starting safety Rashad Jones. They both have 1 year left, so they're not going to lame duck those guys. I think they're doing the right things here from a fantasy perspective. I do think the Miami Dolphins defense was somebody that I actually liked going into this year, not because, I mean, they ended up getting run over in a lot of instances and giving up a ton of rushing yardage. Are the players playing the right schemes all the time? Probably not. Do they need to continue to improve the defense? They do. But from a fantasy perspective, I do think it's a team that can create a lot of negative plays defensively, George.
Well, did Byron Maxwell say they have a new Legion of Boom?
Yeah, well, sure, he would say
that. Someone might want to drug test him.
Yeah. But Jarvis Landry, obviously, you know, a PPR monster, and Rashad Jones is a guy who, in our league, in our dynasty league, 2 years ago, I think he was the top two or three player in the entire when we play a dynasty league with IDPs.
Yes. And he was a loss last year when he got hurt for them. That certainly did hurt. They're probably going to lose Kenny Stills. He's a free agent. I don't think they're going to re-sign him. I don't think they can afford to re-sign him. Not with lot of money to throw into your receivers when you got Landry and Parker. Might want to find a tight end there for that offense. Just a thought here, tight end.
Yeah. Jordan Cameron, not really a reliable option there. So a couple of guys that we've talked about at length. There's a few good options here, and we can continue this discussion in the weeks ahead. But DeSean Jackson, there's been plenty of speculation. Back to the free agents, by the way. There's been plenty of speculation about Jackson returning to Philadelphia. Brandon Graham is excited about it. Football Insider's mumbling about it. But potential fits here for DeSean Jackson are the Eagles, the Titans, and once again, the Rams. So it seems like the Rams are coming up as a consistent talk about them being a landing spot for a receiver. So there's got to be at least some buzz out there that they need another option.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the Deshaun Jackson, I think he's going wherever the most money is. I think he's pure of that. So, but that being said, if you and I were gambling, I would say, hey, give me Philadelphia, Washington. I'll give you the rest of the field. You know, I think he's going to one of those two teams where he's been before, where he's comfortable. I think he likes it there. I think he's good offenses, both of them. And I think they're both going to offer money. You know, I think they're going to offer him a good coin there. I think both organizations would like to have him. You and I discussed yesterday, I'm not in love with the player. He misses a lot of games. He's always dinged up. He's a highlight machine. He's going to catch the 75-yard bomb, but he's not going to get you, you know, six catches for 68 yards. He's not going to get you a tough catch, that first down catch when you need it. You know, that's the kind of play he reminds me of. I wouldn't pay him the big bucks if I'm a team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's a tough guy to rely on. I will say that there are football analysts out there that think he is a big part of what pushes the Washington offense, the Washington vertical offense, down the field, takes the top off the defense, allows guys like Garcon and Reed to get open. So I do think he would be a loss to them. But from a fantasy perspective, DeSean Jackson is very, very difficult to rely on week in, week out. You get the three big weeks, and rest of the time, it's a desert. So with that being said, that's the close of the show. We've talked about a lot today. George, great job analyzing. Appreciate all the help. You think you've got me where I need to be for my draft coming up here in a few weeks. I think you got other people in even better shape. So thank you, and you have a good week. I'll talk to you next Saturday, buddy.
Mike, you as well. Always fun talking baseball with you or any other sports over the weekend.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to get loose here in the weeks ahead as we careen towards baseball draft season. It's Fantasy Bagels and Baseball next with Tony and Cha-Cha. Thank you for listening, folks. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning. We'll be back on air at 7 a.m. tomorrow with George and I here next Saturday. Thanks.